Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. Also, Wombats, you know, blogtalkradio.com. I should also mention now that we are now a part of the Google Play. We just signed up for Google Play. So if you guys have Google Play, you can download this podcast as well. You can also download this podcast now over on iTunes as well. So we're pretty much everywhere. We're also on Stitcher Radio. We're pretty much everywhere now. We've been gone for the past couple of weeks, and I should mention I'm your host today. We've been gone for the past couple of weeks, but I decided to bring the show back. We were a little bit busy with a lot of stuff, and we've had a lot of guests request to be on the show, and I wanted to get back to there as well, as considering that we are starting, yes, ladies and gentlemen, our eighth year of this podcast. It's unbelievable. We've been at it for 8 years, and we're one of the longest-running podcasts now on the network, which is absolutely actually spectacular as well. Before I introduce my lovely and very talented co-host, I do have some really, really sad news to report, though. A very good personal friend of mine and somebody who mentored me into podcasting died last week. And he was a very solid person in terms of this network. He was one who kind of helped establish Blog Talk Radio in its various infancy. And he was the one who got me into podcasting, and it was really good, and it got me into a lot of other things as well. His name is Sean Daly. For those of you who do not know who Sean Daly is, he had actually started a podcast about television shows really early in the network's infancy. And so much, in fact, that he made the network very, very popular, especially considering he had a campaign to bring back the show Jericho, and he was probably the first person ever to have a successful campaign to bring a show back. He actually had a bunch of people send peanuts to the CBS to bring back the show, and they brought it back for one more season. So he made national and international headlines with that as well. He covered a lot of the international, covered a lot of television as well, and had many, many celebrity guests on his show. But as for the man, I've known him way longer than 8 years. I've known him for, 10, 15 years. He was a really excellent broadcaster as well. I met him through a local professional wrestling organization in Vegas. And we were friends there, and we've been friends ever since. Like I said, he kind of mentored me into getting into podcasting, and he's affected so many people on this network. And like I said, he was one of the staples of the early on in his career, and he kind of helped me usher into my podcasts as well, which went from just one to three. Right now I'm doing two now, but I added multiple podcasts on this network. And a lot of people that have just gotten to BTR over the last couple of years probably don't know who Sean is, but they need to know who Sean is. And he had died of a brain aneurysm last Thursday. I just wanted to take a moment and say, I miss my friend. He's a really great individual, and he was, like I said, the guy that kind of started this network more than – and he's also a guy, like I said, a good personal friend of mine. So my condolences to his family. I'm going to miss him. His voice was always there. He was on another network, doing his podcasts again, as recent as last week. So he was gone way too soon. So Sean Daly, we're going to be missed. We're going to miss you. And thank you for all of the things that you've done for me in terms of my podcast. So, I'm sorry that I had to do beginning again. It's a little bit on a sad note, but I wanted to get that out first. But on a happier note, I got a very, very cool individual that's going to be co-hosting with me for the next hour and a half. Her, she's an amateur fighter currently, kind of a journeywoman fighter too, because she kind of fights out of Philadelphia, but she kind of moves around the different gyms as well. You can see her also in the upcoming movie Fight Valley that'll be out sometime next year, which stars Misha Tate and Holly Holm and Cyborg and a bunch of probably the most popular female fighters out there. Serena De Jesus is on with us right now. How you doing, Serena?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
No problem at all. And I know you have a fight coming up. How's fight camp going for you?
It's going great. I've been cutting weight on and off since July, hoping for somebody to actually follow through with saying they want to fight me. I had a girl in September who had a legitimate excuse because she actually blew out her knee. But then I was supposed to fight October 17th. No one was down. Then I was supposed to fight before I left for Kansas City to be around my management company, Poster Boy Fighters. And this girl from Arkansas, after 10 minutes before, you know, my manager told me that, hey, I just asked this girl who's looking for a last-minute 135 fight. I found out 10 minutes later both her coach and her refused to fight me. So I'm like, really, guys? Then I fly to Kansas City. I'm waiting for Steph from Real MMA in Las Vegas. There's two opponents. One was from Colorado, and another one was from California, and they just didn't even bother to confirm the fight. So I'm like, guys. And then now, finally, I'm slated to fight Bridget Nielsen in South Valley Slam in Price, Utah on the 20th. So camp's been going good, especially so since I've come back to Syndicate MMA. I'm finally getting that post-workout sore that I've always missed, like waking up and being like, oh, crap, I'm in bed. I can't get up. I need some Life Alert help. But other than that, you know, everything's going well. My weight's on point. I woke up at 144, and I'm like, I'm still a ways away, so I got this.
Well, that's great to hear. I mean, you know, I've heard of this, but and it's happened a lot of times. I mean, if I remember correctly, it happened to Sarah McMahon a lot of times before she got signed to Invicta, is that she couldn't find any fights. People were kind of refusing to fight her. And, I mean, there is a bunch of other females, I think, that have had that situation. They're just in a opponent slump, I like to call it, The opponents either, you know, for some reason had to drop out due to injury or that they just simply couldn't make it. So, yeah, I'm very familiar with that. Especially in the early days, a couple of years ago when, you know, when fights were very few and far between a lot of times, a lot of these girls didn't want to face somebody that was a little bit higher caliber and were kind of being you know, protective of themselves.
Being
wussing about it. Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I mean,
the thing is this,
yeah,
like, Sarah McMahon is like, freaking Olympic caliber. I just call myself a nerd with big fists and big feet. I mean, the worst thing I'm going to do is leave, like, a footprint on you and be like Blue's Clues going, like, a clue, you know? Matt, you know, I don't have like Olympic caliber training. I'm not from anywhere fancy in particular. I mean, I just bust my ass off. That's all I do. So can I just please get a fight so I can get back to eating all the tasty yet horrible food I like to eat, like cheesesteaks and burgers and stuff, please? Because eating healthy after a while just sucks.
Oh, by the way, I think we've discussed this before, Serena, offline. But I mean, elsewhere, I should say. Favorite place to have a Philly cheesesteak in Philadelphia for you?
Shank's Cheesesteaks near the Delaware River off of Columbus Boulevard is one of my favorites. If I can't get there, I go to Ishkabibble on South Street. They're pretty good, too. But anybody who goes to Pat's and Geno's, I'm sorry, you're a tourist. I don't care if you even live in Philadelphia. You go get your cheesesteaks from there. You are, in my eyes, forever and always a tourist.
Next time I go to Philadelphia, I will steal clear because I think I went to Pat's, I think, last time I was there. And that was a long time ago, though.
Tourist! It's all right, though.
Yeah, tourist.
But the best thing is this. Like, I love to do this post-fight. There's a place on South Street called Lorenzo and Sons. They sell these giant slices of pizza. I mean, so giant, like one slice of pizza, you need two paper plates to hold that slice of pizza. Like half the slice on one plate, half the slice on another. And I get a cheesesteak, and I wrap the pizza on the cheesesteak, and I eat it. It is known affectionately as a Philly roll. And boy, do I miss it.
Oh, wow. I got to try that next time.
You gotta. It's the best. I had Jamie Moyle
try
it when she was out there with me, and she was like, what is this? And then she ate it, and she's like, damn it, Serena, now I'm never going to enjoy cheesesteaks again because it's that good.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm totally, you know, when it comes to pizza, you know, you're either kind of a Chicago deep dish guy or a New York guy. I'm a New York guy. I love, the big, thinner crushed pizza. I'm a fan of that. So, So yeah, I mean,
I just like pizza,
you know.
So.
Yeah, I like pizza in general too. But it's great. It's great to be able to see that as well. But speaking of Philadelphia, though, I mean, what was it like for you to be on set and to be able to be a part of Fight Valley? Because I mean, it's, you know, I believe this is probably your first movie, right?
Yeah, it's my first movie. It was completely by chance that I got on this because I remember just being out with my friends and whatever, and then my Twitter was blowing the hell up. I'm like, what the hell just happened here? I mean, this was before the highlights thing came on. I mean, my phone was blowing up. They're like, Serena, you got to hop on this. They're looking for women to be in this movie who are from the New York and PA, New Jersey area. I'm like, shit. And they're like looking for fighters who are local to the area. So I just hopped on there, got in contact with Rob Hawk, and Rob Hawk's like, yeah, we could definitely use you, and I popped on scene, and it was really cool. I kind of fangirled a little bit, I'm not going to lie, when I saw Cyborg for the first time, because I remember watching her, Roxy, Shayna, you know, Sarah, you know, and Julie Kedzie, all the old vets of the sport. So, of course, when I saw Cyborg, I'm, like, fangirling everywhere. It was nice to also see Misha again because I've met her before once in Las Vegas when during my last fight out here. It was just like in the middle of my weight cut. Roxy took me and my teammate Hannah Fitzpatrick out for lunch at Skinny Fest. And what happened is Misha's there. I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Like mentally, I'm like, holy crap, this is Misha Tate right here in front of me. And I'm like, oh, hi, Misha. And like, you know. And then after lunch, he's, like, telling me and Hannah, like, hey, you guys want to go to a VIP pool party at the Cosmopolitan? I'm like, abso-fucking-lutely I do. I mean, part of my language, but I was pretty excited. So I go up, we go up there. I'm like, oh, my God, is this what being a celebrity feels like? Cause it's like that VIP, you go up the elevator and everything. I'm like, what? And she noticed I wasn't eating anything or really drinking much of anything. So she kind of put two and two together and knew I was cutting weight. And she was asking how I felt, given this is my first fight away from home, because normally when I'm fighting, my whole family's around with me and supporting me. And, you know, how's my weight doing? She gave me all these tips and stuff, man, and she really didn't have to do that. I'm not, you know, I'm not on her team. I'm just a friend of a friend. And she went out of her way to give me support like that, and it really meant a lot. So it was nice to see her again. Of course, back then I was cutting weight, so I cracked the joke. Why is it every time I see you, I'm cutting weight? And then I saw Holly Holm, and she was really nice, but she wasn't really talkative at the time. But to be fair, it was during the media day where we're getting swarmed by everybody signing posters and stuff. So it was nice. I liked it. And then the acting itself, I think I pretty much got down from pretend being hit from, you know, friends of mine who are actually, like, pro wrestlers and run their own independent pro wrestling circus. So I kind of got that acting of being hit and throwing hits down. So it was a fun time just being on set with everybody and getting out there. So I'd do it again if I, you know, need to. So, yeah, that's my experience on it.
Yeah, you know, I was I was busy with my movie all summer. And I remember one of the fight scenes that we had was really interesting to say the least because, you know, actually one of my actors got hit during it. But the guy was a fighter, before. So he was,
right.
He knew how to take a hit, but it was kind of funny that she ended up clipping him. And it happens, you know, it was an accident. She didn't mean to do it, but it ended up happening. Yeah, I mean, the fight coordination for me was a little bit, you know, was a little bit difficult. I think my fight scenes came out okay. I'm not saying that they're going to be, you know, absolutely great when mine comes out, but it's something new and it's something interesting in terms of trying to shoot a fight scene, et cetera, as well. I mean, did you learn a lot in terms of, you know, how a fight scene is shot and how you have to move, et cetera?
I kind of learned the basics. I was just told which which way to look, how to look when I got hit, you know, how to react at what time and all that. So I did pretty well with that. I mean, honestly, even if I was accidentally clipped by Misha during that film, it's okay because my mom always said I had a thick skull. So, you know, Might as well use it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, it happens, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting to say the least in terms of that aspect of it as well, and to have that experience behind your belt. And I know Misha's got that now, is getting that experience on there. So is Cyborg, and so is Holly. I think Holly actually did a couple of television shows before this, I believe, too. So I might be wrong on that, but and I believe Julie has as well. She's done a couple of television shows as well. So
gotcha.
You know,
the
yeah,
only other acting experience I got is that reality show that I was on in when I was out here in Las Vegas. It was a local one called the Real MMA Fight House, but it really wasn't so much acting involved. Like, I was, you know me. I hope you know how I am. I personally give, you know, zero cares about much anything. I just kind of live my life how it is, and if anybody kind of has a problem, oh, well, no one likes them either. So, you know, that was the only other media experience I've really had in my life, so this is quite a step off from that.
Yeah, you know, and same thing with Roxy on The Ultimate Fighter, too. I mean, she didn't really care about the drama, you know. She was kind of out there, and, you know, I kind of was figuring that was what was going to happen anyway, because I knew Roxy, you know, and that makes her so endearing, is that she is, and, I mean, a lot of the fighters said that she was kind of like the house mother. You know, making sure everybody was okay and all that as well. So,
constantly, and I love her for it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's great to be able to, you know, to be able to see that. And there is kind of that stretch, and I don't know about you, but I've observed this, and I've been observed this since the beginning of it. There is a little bit of, you know, obviously some people are not going to like other people, but in the beginning, when the sport was starting out, and there was no amateur fights, there was just pros, and if they were fighting,
yeah,
you know, like maybe five or six, there was a camaraderie that says, you know, we're kind of building this together. And then now it seems like, you know, with certain aspects of the sport, that it seems like they want to have that drama behind these fights. And they want people to hate each other, and that's tough for me, you know. And I'm pretty sure you're absolutely aware of this, that it's really tough for me to see that, because I feel that this sport was built by a lot of these older fighters like Misha, like Julie, like a bunch of these other fighters, Cheryl Rosa. I mean, there's a bunch of these fighters that, and Megumi Fujii, who all kind of developed this, you know, helped develop what is now the divisions that are their MMA divisions right now. And I think we're getting away from that. You know, we're getting away from the fact that, and I think, you know, there's a lot of new fighters coming out, and I think that there's some of them are you know, kind of in that old school mentality where, you know, we got to help each other in order to build the sport. And then there's the other ones that are just kind of on their own. And then that's the kind of the Ronda Rouseys of this business, is that, well, you know, I'm Ronda Rousey, you know, I don't need anybody, she's doing a great job in terms of her style, but there's always that thing. I mean, that's always that part of it, you know, and I kind of hate that, you know, we're getting away from the part of, you know, we're all in this together, and that kind of just ticks me off at times, but yeah, I mean,
this whole thing has been irritating. It's been irritating for me, because it's like, I feel like everyone blew past that whole camaraderie thing, because I think they've seen, oh, we're in the UFC, the hard work's over, now we can just go kill each other. I mean, you don't see the old vets of the sport doing it, but these newer fighters who are coming in are trying to do this WWE-style smack talk BS and try and make a name for themselves for them to stick out more than the others, so they can get more attention from potential sponsors, bigger organizations, and all that nonsense. And it's absolutely stupid. I mean, I've seen some fighters who I followed for a while go turn from the coolest people ever to absolutely batshit crazy because, you know, of the new fame and opportunities that are out there for women now that women's MMA has gone more mainstream. Like, I mean, there's a difference for me who just kind of progresses their way through. I mean, I don't really talk smack, but the thing is, if someone ever does it to me, I mean, I'm going to start roasting somebody because I'm pretty good at that. I just like to fight, and I like to have my talent show, like, put myself out there, my talent to show who I am as a character and as a fighter, who I am. But, you know, Unfortunately, I'm seeing as the farthest goes down the road, especially, you know, with all this, I swear, all of MMA is starting to become like WWE when it comes to smack talk nonsense. I mean, yeah, Muhammad Ali did, you know, kind of started way back in the day in the boxing era, and some people are just picking up now, and, you know, Bad Blood's now starting to make fights, not exactly talent versus talent anymore. I mean, this is kind of why I wish the old school rules of MMA, where it's like tournament style, were brought back for everything. Not for, like, number 5 to go against number 1 or number 12 to go against number, you know, 3 or some dumb stuff like that. Now, you put things back in order, okay? I could care less about this Bad Blood BS. I mean, say that ish for, like, on Facebook or Twitter or something. Keep it there. I don't need this coming into a sport, all right? I've seen enough of it everywhere. If I want some, you know, blue-collar drama, I'm going to go turn on my WWE and go stare at some eye candy, all right? That's about it.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, yeah, I think it's you know, I think that it is. And I also have a problem with this fact that a lot of these fighters aren't necessarily giving back to the younger fighters or trying to mentor these younger fighters up. You know, I think there are examples of this is still that isn't happening. That there are older stars. I mean, Roxy is a prime example of a veteran that's been helping out in terms of you know, helping out the younger talent. And I think a lot of times also the view that it's that you know these girls are so hyper focused on their, you know, climbing up the ladder and all that. And I understand you have to train, you have to, you know, promote, you have to do all this well. But to give back, I think, is a very important as well. I think, you know, in order for this sport to survive, there's got to be some mentorship in terms of that as well. And, you know, I have always argued that, you know, well, you know, Ronda does a great part of promoting herself and promoting the sport, but she doesn't necessarily give back in terms of physically giving back. So, it's just a thing. You know, I think the sport is at a crossroads, and I'm interested to see what kind of happens, especially when Ronda leaves the scene. It's going to be interesting to see where that kind of goes and how the scene kind of gets mixed up and et cetera. So,
there's going to be one hell of a power vacuum.
It'll be interesting, to say the least, to see what happens, because it might give Misha the opportunity to be number one, and you know, it might, you know, we'll have to see what happens in 2016. I think Ronda's going to retire next year, at least semi-retire, so she can pursue other interests, I think, because it just sounds like she's kind of setting up that table, because she has the boxing going. She's saying, oh, I could go to boxing and go to WWE. I think
don't
that
get
she's
me started
kind of doing
on
that. I think she's kind of almost a power play. You know, it's like, well, you know, I could do other stuff. I don't have to do fighting. And it might end up being that the UFC has to pay a little bit more to keep her if she wants to stay around. But we'll see what happens next year. But we'll see what goes on there as well. I mean, it's great to be able to see that as well. How is it for you to have, you know, I'll ask you this question. How did you get started in fighting? And how did you get started in fighting? Just period.
Oh, all right. Well, I've always been a tomboy since I was very little. I kind of gravitated more to the Batman and, you know, Marvel and DC butt-kicking stuff. And occasionally Sailor Moon. I mean, Sailor Moon was girly, but let's keep in mind she also kicked a lot of butt, too. And I was a big video gamer because everybody knew I had autism, because this is during the 90s where all the kids apparently had ADHD or whatever. So I didn't know how to socialize with my peers, so I'd pretty much either watch cartoons or play video games for the most part and, you know, be with my family. So after playing Tekken and Street Fighter for a while, my dad, you know, I see him watching, like, you know, these two big old dudes beating the crap out of each other in a cage. And I'm like, what is this? And all these guys are different styles, you know, just beating each other up. I'm like, whoa, this looks like the Street Fighter games I've been playing my whole life, my whole, you know, little life, you know. And then I got more into it. I watched it. I watched some more MMA promotions than just UFC. I watched Pride, you know, F1, you know, Bellator, Strikeforce, all that. Since I've been growing up, and I've always wanted to see women pop into sport. I mean, around the end of elementary school, I hope kind of faded a little bit, and I started to, you know, And that's kind of another reason I didn't do Taekwondo too long. I did it for a few years, but and just kind of tapered off. Like, my interest kind of tapered off in that because I didn't see women coming into the sport. Then, cue, like, the end of middle school, like, going to high school, I'm seeing, you know, on YouTube because, again, no, next to no socialization skills with people, I'd hop the school firewall and go watch YouTube all the time because YouTube was technically illegal to access at school. And I'd go watch all the fight. I'd watch MMA fights because I just like to watch them. And then I see, you know, a lot of, you know, Cyborg and, you know, Roxy and Gina Carano fights pop up on my recommended feed. I'm like, holy shit, let me check these out. And from there, life just kind of changed. And started getting more back in shape, you know. And then after high school ended, I need structure because if I don't have structure in my life, I kind of go ballistic. And so I went to a local gym that did jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai separately. And I started from there, just, you know, trained for a few years, and then I started doing Muay Thai fights. And after my second one, after I broke a girl's ribs with a knee and gave her two black eyes, despite 12-ounce gloves, head guard, and shin pads on, you know, I still kind of messed up. No one really wanted to fight me after that. And then I went out and, you know, to Thailand at one point. I tried to go back the next year, but a coup happened. And I'm like, yeah, after a grenade gets tossed into a crowd of people, I shouldn't go there. And then I'm actually I'm friends with Roxy on Facebook, so I was like the fan. And I was just like, hey, Rox, is it cool if I train at your gym for a little bit, you know, because this happened? She's like, oh, yeah, sure. And she gave me the hookup. In fact, I'm right now in the same fighter house I first started out in when I first came out here. And, you know, I trained with her for, like, throughout the whole summer. Then I went home, and I'm, like, feeling ready for an MMA fight. And then I had my MMA debut in Matrix Fights down in Philadelphia, where I was pitted against those stupid rules to ever exist in MMA. Thanks to PA's Athletic Commission, you guys, I do not like you. I'm going to put that out there right now. I don't care if this, you know, hits me in the ass in the future, but for amateurs, you're under three fights. Make you wear shin pads, these Mickey Mouse puffed up style looking gloves, and you cannot kick the head, and you cannot hit the face of a grounded opponent. So it's like, well, what the hell is this? Despite being,
I believe it's called pancreation. Go ahead.
Yeah. Despite this, I didn't know these rules until the night of the fight. So I'm like, well, damn, there goes 50% of my game plan right out the damn window. Thank you. You know, no one in my gym or no one in general failed to disclose that information to me beforehand. And, you know, I was having a really shitty time during my first fight camp because there was just like drama everywhere in and out the gym. It's a whole lot of nonsense, you know. People starting to get really shady with me, and just like when I'm there, you know, it's kind of not in the right mindset. I'm getting this girl is just fucking running me up against the cage, like GSP levels of stalling right there, because she knew if she was standing in front of me, I was gonna beat that ass, and which I was doing on the stand up. I was just landing blows and kicks everywhere, but every time she had me against the cage, I had no idea what to do because at the time I was in a school that only did jits and Muay Thai. And I only remember the little scraps and stuff that Roxy taught me at Syndicate MMA to escape the cage and then eventually win that whole fight with a rear naked choke. Because once my hand got slipped under her neck anyways, there was no way in hell I was getting it out because the gloves are that ridiculously big for amateurs. So it's like, well, it's all or nothing now. So I just stood there, you know, burned my arms out. My arms were like, they're going to pop out my shoulder sockets. And I end up getting that fight. So, yeah, ever since I was little, I guess I was always meant to be a fighter. So I've enjoyed this experience so far. And, you know, my last fight in Las Vegas was really cool. Cheyenne Hinsey's Hawaiian wrecking machine is really powerful. Like, when talk about Hawaiian punch, Jesus Christmas, that girl hit me so hard. I think that was, like, the hardest hit I've gotten so far throughout my fighting career in Muay Thai and in MMA. So, but we're buddies now, so it's cool. I'm actually going to meet up with her this weekend. So we're just going to have fun and all that fun stuff. So I like the camaraderie in sports. I don't like to be that asshole who goes like, oh, yeah, I whooped your ass. I like to be cool with people I fight against because at the end of the day, we're all warriors. We honestly shouldn't be putting one another down. And that's why I get a little irritated at the trash talking that goes on in MMA, especially with the women. It's like, guys, can we just not do that? you look like an asshole right now. Thank you. So yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Just by hearing you talk and the way that you talk, you know, for first of all, you might be you actually remind me of another Philly fighter named Tara LaRosa. you know, she has the same attitude that you are, you know? I mean, she's like, you know, she's very down to earth. I mean, she's kicked a lot of butt over the past, you know, 15 years of her career,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's great to be able to see that as well. So it's great to be able to see this. But now I think we're ready for a guest. Are you ready for a guest, Serena?
Oh, hell yeah, I am.
I'm very privileged to have the producers of a very great movie that's coming out this week. You know, your movie's coming out next year, but their movie's coming out this way. It's called Dancin'. It's on. It's going to be out in certain outlets coming up this week. And I believe
mm-hmm.
One of the producers on with us right there. Hi, is this Christina or is this Jennifer?
This is Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer, how's everything going?
Hi, I'm well. How are you?
Good. How's the press been going so far for the movie?
You know, everything's going really well. Let me clarify real quick. Me and Christina were the line producers on the film, and David Winters was our producer. But it's going really, really well. We're all really excited about the release this week. It came out on the 30th. We did a pre-release in Panama City Beach, where we filmed the movie, on the 29th of October, and it was a lot of fun. And we're doing really well. It's really exciting stuff.
I believe your co-line producer is on with us right now. How you doing?
Hi, how are you? This is Christina Austin.
Hey, Christina.
How's it going?
How's it go? It's going great. You know, it was great to be able to hear that you had such a successful debut last week as well. I mean, what was your take on it?
I couldn't have been happier. I was on cloud nine with it, really. I couldn't ask for more. The world premiere in Los Angeles at the Harmony Gold Preview House was a really great time. And then just to get to see all of the outpour on social media, people taking pictures with the poster and hashtagging them with us and with our Jeep giveaway contest, the Jeep and It's On hashtag. I just think we got a really great response.
Yeah, you guys did a dance contest, I think, with this. Am I correct?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, we did.
That one was
that
a good
go?
Time.
How did the videos go?
They were really
fun, actually. We had a lot of feedback from that. We had a lot of submissions. It was really hard to pick, you know, who we were going to bring out to L.A. The winner got to go out to L.A. and walk the red carpet and, you know, basically meet, you know, the cast that was there and David and everything. And he was thrilled about it. I think he was 9 years old, wasn't he, Christina? 9 years old?
He was. Yeah, 9 years old, named Mitchell Savitsky. And when I asked him what he likes to do with his time, he responded to me, "Dancing is my life," which is so fantastic because that's a quote from the movie. And he said that before he even saw the movie. So he was perfect to join us at the red carpet.
Okay. I was going to say, tell us a little bit about the premise of the movie. I don't know if Christina or Jennifer, one of you wants to do it, but...
Oh, the premise of the movie. So basically, it's a rich girl from Beverly Hills goes to Panama City Beach to stay at her father's hotel for the summer, and it's this performing hotel, so there's a lot of performers in the lobby, and basically everybody that works there has some kind of artsy performance kind of skill that they do. So she's not really looking forward to that because she hasn't seen her father in a while, but she gets there. She does love dancing, and she sees, you know, some of the performers are dancers. She meets a guy who is one of the dishwashers in the hotel, and he's also a performer in the hotel, and they kind of fall in love, and the dad doesn't really want her to be with him. He kind of wants her to be with somebody, you know, somebody else in a higher stature, so he's a little resistant at first, and then there's a dance contest that they do that she gets involved with that the Florida Dance Contest that happens every year, and she just happens to be in town for that. So she's trying to find the right partner to do that with. And it's just really fun. The dancing is absolutely amazing. Brandon Bryant choreographed it, a lot of the dances, and he was fantastic. And it's just a lot of high energy. The music's fantastic. We had Misha Siegel, who scored the film, and he was absolutely wonderful. The scoring on the picture is just wonderful. So it's a lot of energy, a lot of dancing, and a lot of great music. It's really good.
This sounds like a film my sister absolutely adore, because my sister is a very, very, she's a ballet dancer. She's also very, you know, she's into that kind of scene. She's a very cute person. Meanwhile, I'm a big tomboy MMA fighter, so she tries to get me into some of those things. I'm like, no, don't. But this, I can find my cave and do this with her. So
if you like MMA, we have a world champion kickboxer in the movie, Gary Daniels, who also starred in The Expendables.
That's awesome.
Yes. So you could certainly tune in and watch him tear up a punching bag in at least one scene.
Of course, you can definitely do that. That just got my interest right away.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's great, and it really is a movie for dancers, made by dancers. And, I mean, David always says, no matter what I do in life, I will always just be a dancer. And he just absolutely loves the dancing world. So, you know, this was kind of his baby, and he really, you know, we all did just such a great job. And we had a great crew that worked really, really hard. We had very long hours. We shot for 8 weeks. And probably the most, you know, the really, really bad weather,
which is funny
because the film is based, you know, during the summer, and we're filming in, you know, 30-degree weather in Florida. So, but you would never know it. You would never know that was happening. But, it made for interesting days of work, but we had a great crew. We had a great cast. So it was really...
So give us a little bit of insight on something. For people who are not in dancing, you know, listeners, I bet there's probably, like, almost all of them. So what's it like to be a dancer, and what's it like to be making a movie about this, about dancing?
And that's a question.
Okay, anybody's open to answer that.
You know, well, I was a dancer for 18 years, and I got to say, being able to make a dance movie was probably one of the coolest things I've ever done. It's really interesting because, you know, you have rehearsals you have to schedule, and, you know, you have to audition people, you have to hold auditions. There's a lot of extra work going into it, a lot of scheduling going into it. And it was really cool because the way that we filmed this, it wasn't your normal dance movie like some of the other like Step Up, you know, dances.
Or High School Musical, which I'll gag over.
Yeah, it was a little more of the High School Musical kind of feel, in the sense of, you know, these were choreographed numbers and things like that. But these were all by dancers that are the top of the line dancers. They're the best in the world.
Awesome.
And it was cool to be able to see them also have to act, because obviously they're dancers. They haven't ever acted before, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very interesting to see them play that role and how they, you know, rehearsed and practiced for that. And I thought they all did such a great job. But it was really cool. And we also, there was a place in Fort Walton Beach about an hour away that has world-class salsa dancers. And for one of our scenes, we had almost 200 dancers in the middle of the street doing a salsa number, and we had these world-class champions in front of them, you know, doing their routines, their partner routines, and that was probably one of the coolest scenes that we did. That you see, I mean, we had the camera on the crane going up, you know, doing wide shots, and it was just really like magical to see all that come together, and especially you're in a dancing classroom. Rehearsing a number from a song, you know, no big deal. And then when you put it on camera and on film, what was really cool is you can feel what's happening. If the character's sad, you feel that. If the character is happy, you feel that. And that's what was really cool, to express it through dance as opposed to words, you know. So that was really...
Exactly.
It was really cool to see us be able to execute that.
I'm somewhat familiar with dance, with emotions being portrayed by dance, because I am the oldest of four kids, and I'm the only one who does MMA, and the other three do ballet. I got two brothers. One's 16. He's been to he does ballet. He's been to Bolshoi's intensive and all that stuff.
Wow.
He's about ready to probably be snatched up by, you know, professional ballet companies, like probably PA Ballet or something, Houston maybe. I got my sister who obviously does ballet more for, you know, just to have something to do and something to fall in love with. And then we got the 12-year-old who's hoping, you know, to follow in the 16-year-old's shoes. And, you know, so I've seen the performances. At first, I used to be that, you know, that one skeptic, like, I'm getting dragged to a dance. And then, I'm not going to lie, I used to be one of those people until I saw their recitals. Like, it was crazy.
Right.
It was magical. From seeing the little ones all the way up to the near adult ones just, like, doing certain musical numbers from certain scenes or whatever, it was really cool. I'm like, I gotta get to these more often. So every summer when they have their end of season shows, I always try to make sure I get to one of them.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Karina, that you know, in fighting, that footwork's always the basis for a lot of the stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've done Muay Thai
exactly,
before, so you know that you gotta have your feet at certain positions. You have to, you know, do that as well. So, yeah, I mean, footwork is always the basis for everything. So you might be a dancer yet.
There's a quote, actually, talking about that I actually said to one of my brother's ballet teachers, and they absolutely love me for it. It's like in ballet, you see the art form, but you don't see the destruction that happens to these poor dancers' feet and bodies.
Oh,
but
yeah.
In Muay Thai, you see the destruction of you know, elbows and knees and kicks, but you don't see the intricate footwork that comes into play to be able to perform such maneuvers.
You really don't. And growing up for me, dance was my entire life up until pretty much the age of 20. And for me, just seeing, I would see my friends who were, you know, had excellent technique and were the top in our class and things like that. And they would go to New York and go to, you know, School of American Ballet or audition, and they would just get completely ripped apart. You're too fat, mm-hmm. you're too this, you know. And it's really interesting to see the kids nowadays that are dancing and what, you know, kind of, they're different challenges. And I think that dance has kind of taken on a life of its own, and additional ballet and things like that. I mean, that's a good, like being able to read a book is helps you out in life. Traditional ballet and technique is very important to be a good dancer, but I think that a lot of these kids nowadays, while they do have that technique, they also bring kind of a funk to them. You know, they bring their own style. They dance with sneakers now. You know, they don't have that ballet shoes on dancing. They have like street clothes on, and they're just good. And I really envy that, because I kind of wish that was kind of how it was when I was growing up. But it's really cool to see. It's really cool to see that.
I was going to say about the cast. I mean, you have some really talented individuals in the cast. Whitney Carson, who won Dancing with the Stars. You've got Shion, who won Who Think You Can Dance, and Jordan Clark, who won the Canadian version of You Think You Can Dance as well. And I mean, they're showing you that there is a kind of a there's something at the end of the rainbow for you if you work hard enough and are good enough to be able to make it to this level. I mean, you know, first of all, what was it like working with them, and what does that mean to you, like, you know, to see that, you know, maybe when you were younger you didn't see that you could come up to this point at which you could be, a national celebrity?
Christina, you want to take that? Or I can take it.
Sure. It was great working with these kids. It's really an honor anytime you get the opportunity to work with somebody who's at the absolute height of what they do. These kids, they're really not kids anymore, but when we worked with them, they were younger, and they were just so extremely talented. And it's really great to get to watch somebody do something that they're so good at. For me, I certainly was not raised a dancer. I was raised by a dancer, so I've always appreciated dance, just never could actually do it very well, which never stopped me from trying, I won't lie. But it's really great to see what happens when you get somebody who is as talented as Whitney Carson. and you put her next to somebody who's as talented as Keon, and both of them specialize in entirely different things. Keon is, of course, a classically trained ballet dancer, whereas Whitney Carson, though also classically trained in ballet and other things, she really specializes in her ballroom work. So when you put the two of them together and see what happens when you take the best of both of their specialties and see it choreographed into one routine and then brought to life by talented people, there really just isn't much else in the world that feels like that.
And it's
same
a lot
thing
of high
with
energy.
Jordan Clark.
Yeah, it's a lot of high energy too. You know, they just, the energy they had in the room when they would rehearse, or when, you know, you could tell they were perfectionists. And I mean, Russell with his crumping, you know, he plays the captain in the film, and he won So You Think You Can Dance season 6, and he's phenomenal, and you know, his personality comes out, and it's a small part, but it was, you know, he was able to really work with it and do popping and locking moves and just make it a whole character, and people love him for it.
Yeah, the captain really really shines through, who's played by Rosie Ferguson, who Jenny was just talking about, and I just, you know, we can't say enough about how excited we were to get to see these kids. Some other stars that came out were also from So You Think You Can Dance, Pauline Mata, Tad Godwong, and Comfort Fodoki. And they came out and did numbers for the dance contest, which were mind-blowing. It's really awesome to get to work with people at that level.
And then we had, you know, Brandon Bryant choreograph the numbers, and, you know, everybody loved Brandon and his personality. He was just always happy and fun and wanted to be there, and, you know, we'd get everybody riled up, and we had these big dance numbers with 200-plus, you know, extras, and most, you know, a lot of them weren't dancers. He was still able to give them moves to make it look sharp and to make the whole scene fit well, and it was really interesting to see how they, like I said, transitioned from dancing to acting to dancing to acting, and they did it very seamlessly, I thought.
And it's great to see how they've grown since then. They're all working quite a bit. In fact, Whitney Carson, in addition to winning Dancing with the Stars, was also nominated for an Emmy for her choreography on the show that season.
Ooh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Brandon Bryan is touring with Britney Spears in Vegas right now. You know, Keon has his own studio he's doing a lot of projects on. I think it's called I Am Force Studios. You know, Jordan's on a TV show in Canada. Matt's been
touring. As
well
touring. As a theater.
You know, everybody's, yeah,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's just, you know, they're working like crazy, and it's so nice to see that. I love that. They're really doing a great job. But it was really a pleasure working with them, as Christina said. It really was.
What was their reaction when they got to be able to see the movie for the first time?
Oh, man, I think they were just as excited as we were. The one thing you could say is, of course, it happens a lot with anybody who's an on-screen personality, be it television or films, it can be awkward and tricky to see yourself for the first time on TV like that. Whether or not any of them felt it, I'm not sure, but it's always something I think about. It's interesting. I had I've had some small acting parts, and turning around and seeing myself in TV, you know, on TV or in a film afterward can be kind of a shock. It's weird to get to see your work like,
oh,
that.
Oh, boy,
you know?
I know that.
Yeah.
But, no, they all seem very pleased with the end result, and they, you know, they were excited to be a part of it, and, you know, they were very honored to work with David Winters, as Christina and I were. It was definitely really cool to be able to sit next to him when we were auditioning people, and him turning to me and asking my opinion on things, and, you know, that was kind of one of the coolest experiences ever, too, for me with all of this. But, yeah, it was really just a great learning experience and a great cast and crew. And I mean, it took an army to make this film happen. And we started, you know, 4 years ago, back in 2011. So,
ooh.
Yeah. It's been a long journey. It's been a very long journey.
That hard journey pay off. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
It is great. It's kind of bittersweet, though. It's kind of like, wow. It's really done.
No.
It's kind of hard to, believe. Every morning I wake up wondering what else we'll need to do for the film, and it's done.
So, quick question, because obviously, you know, I just want to have this information be put out there. Is this going to be a nationwide release in movies, or is it, you know, like how is the distribution going to work?
It's
I really do want to see it.
It opened nationwide on Friday in theaters. I don't have the exact screen count at this moment, but it was across
this
the country
Friday,
somewhere in the range of somewhere in the range of a 1,000 theaters, I believe. And
if you go to dancingiton.com, you'll be able to see all the theaters that are releasing it. And just
yeah,
to let
you got
know,
a part of me,
Serena, that
no
Philadelphia
matter.
And Las Vegas do have showings.
That's
oh,
good
great.
Because
yeah.
part of my, you know, me not know it's because I've been basically without a TV for like almost a month now, so
oh.
I haven't been able to keep up on much of anything because, well, this is the life of a fighter. I travel all the time,
sure.
So
right.
I really don't have too much TV time to see commercials for anything or. And plus, everything on the internet's now been, like, all about Creed. I mean, don't get me wrong, I want to see Creed, too, but I would like to see other options of movies to see besides Creed. So,
well, it's
yeah.
really cool when it released, too, because we did like, premiere, like, little premiere events all over. We did one in Los Angeles at the Staples Center with Pauline and Tad. And then we had a couple of openings in Miami and Fort Lauderdale. And then we had one big one in New York City with Russell Ferguson. He performed in Times Square. And then he walked to there was a Regal right in Times Square that was showing it. And he basically walked all the way back there with some audience members that, you know, fans that wanted to do autographs. And then he signed autographs and did interviews and took pictures. And, I mean, it was one of the coolest things ever. And to have a...
All the times I'm not in New York City, I swear to God.
Yeah.
Man.
It was pretty cool. But,
I will mention, it is playing here in Vegas. So you guys can check it
That's
out.
Good.
At any of the Regal theaters, we'll have it. So
awesome.
You guys can look that up. So you guys
I'm
taking
my sister
when
I get back home.
Yeah, then Philly's also has it too. So definitely check it out. Like I said, go to dancingiton.com. You guys can check out where it's playing as well. I mean, it's great to be able to see that, you know, you guys have a list of where you guys are. I know it's a limited release, and there's certain places that aren't going to get it, but it's going to be interesting to say the least in terms of see how a reaction is to what you do have, and maybe if you can't catch it there, you can catch it on DVD or on digital copy come next year. So hopefully that's going to happen.
Yep, and
as
like
well.
February, March,
exactly.
It'll be out in Walmart and other things like that. And we're doing the Jeep contest until this Friday. So if you share any of the pictures or the poster and hashtag Jeep and it's on, then you get to enter a chance to win a Jeep Wrangler, which is pretty cool.
Hey,
that's not too shabby.
Definitely fun for the whole family to go see.
Yeah, you can. So you
like
can find out more about that too.
Heart.
Yeah, I was gonna say you can do that too. I mean, dancingiton.com. You guys can check out the Geek Giveaway there as well. I mean, yeah, the bunch of the other things you can see the theatrical trailer. Where you can watch as well. You know, I mean, it's great to be able to see this as well and, see how people are reacting. Obviously, I mean, the first dance contest. Was really good as well. So, it really started getting people kind of thinking about it as well. Do you think that there'll be a sequel? Do you think that after just watching it, do you think that you guys would love to do a sequel to this?
You know,
there's some things in the works.
David
really wants to do a sequel. He wants to do a lot of things with it. So, we're kind of in talks with him with that. And, we'd love to do another one. And I think people are going to really love the dancing and love the music is phenomenal too. So,
yeah.
I think there would be.
Yeah, I want to mention also on Twitter you can follow them at dancing_its_on on Twitter, and then also on Facebook Dancing It's On as well. So you guys can check out more information about that as well. Anything else you have a question about, Serena?
No, but I am definitely excited to see this movie. I'm going to actually put that and share that on my profile as soon as we're finished here and just be like, hey guys, go see this. Cause I know my sister, she's 14. She's a little cutie and everything. And she will go absolutely gaga over this. So if my mom doesn't take her to see it, I know I definitely will be. So if there's a sequel, shoot, I'm down. I'll be a little. I promise I'll be more proactive in seeking that out and being
great.
About that.
Well, thank you so much for having us. It's been a lot of fun talking about it and kind of just recapping
basically the last 4 years of my life. In a nutshell.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, no problem at all. And if you two ever have any other projects that are coming up or coming out, please let me know. I know you have my email address, so I'd love to have you guys back
on.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's been great. We had a great time.
No problem. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye. And that was Jennifer George and Christina Marie Austin. They're the line producers for Dancing It's On. Like I said, go to dancingitson.com. And you guys can check out that Jeep giveaway, also where you could see the film in the theater near you. It's great to be able to talk to them about their experiences as well. You seem to have a pretty good time talking to them Serena.
Yeah, I mean, I like to learn about things that are different from what I do. I like to learn about different. I like the arts. I like to support the performing arts. I used to be that person like ew, dancing, but now being in a family of dancers, you know, I have a deep appreciation for it. And seeing that they go through this almost the same struggles as a fighter for weight, for, you know, performance and everything. It's like, you know, it's just two parallel opposite dimensions, but yet they still have the same goals in mind. So it was nice to hear, you know, how they can actually turn that into a movie and, you know, have it be a fun movie, too, for everybody to enjoy. Not something like The Black Swan where, yeah, it's enjoyable, it's about dance, but it's more dark and gritty, about the kind of the underbelly of the ballet world. But this is about all forms of dancing and how, you know, everything can come together and be awesome because lately, you know, it's not just ballet I've been seeing making a rise and, you know, the dancing world. I've been seeing a lot of hip-hop mixed with ballet, like, you know, modern dance schools, like, you know, almost not exactly like b-boy breakdancing, but like, you know, more of a, you know, a good urban yet cool feel to dancing. I don't know what these dance schools are called normally, but I've been seeing them rise, and I've looked in a few times because the door's always open. They look like they're doing some pretty cool stuff, so I would love to see where this goes as well. So I'm actually excited to see the movie. I mean, I don't think I'll see it in Las Vegas because, well, this is something I do owe my sister since I've been away for a while. So that's on my to-do list as soon as I come back home.
Yeah, I mean it's great. It's great to be able to see that as well. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it's almost like kind of like MMA. You know, there
mm-hmm.
was always certain forms, and now they're kind of combining to make one form. And some people are good at one portion of the game, and other people are not. I mean, it's great to be able to see that mix as well.
Yeah,
it's very interesting to say the least. And our next guest is up right now. She's a very talented singer out of Texas. She's been performing since age 13. She's won many national contests as well. Her new single is out right now. It is called "He Only Loves Me on the Dance Floor," which, you know, it kind of makes sense for this show. I am really privileged to have Madeline Victorian with us right now. How are you doing, Madeline?
Hi, I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. How's been the reaction so far in terms of the single?
Oh, it's been doing really great. You know, I'm really excited about all the people that are, you know, messaging me now and you know, gaining new fans on Facebook and seeing how it's going on the charts right now. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, can you tell us a little bit about, first of all, how you got kind of started? I know a lot of you, and I think you got started at a really early age, actually. But tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I started when I was about 5 years old singing, you know, in public. I've been singing, you know, even prior to that at a younger age, but I started singing different little Christmas pageants and plays, and then I started at church, and I began also singing. I did my first, I had a talent search when I was about 15 years old. I went to go, my parents took me, and from there I really skyrocketed it as well. I did some training here where I'm from in Deep South Texas, and then my parents would travel with us to do some more training up in Dallas, Texas, which is about like 9-10 hours away from where I live. Texas is huge, so you got to travel pretty far to get to Dallas from where I'm at. And training is what I mean by I did a lot of acting training and some vocal performance training as well, a little bit of modeling, but mainly, you know, my singing and the acting were big for me then. And I did some auditioning in New York. I got some callbacks from some agents up there in New York, but not necessarily the route I wanted to go to. just yet at least. And I got cast for a group called Radio Disney in Dallas. So I did some events with that and also got the opportunity to share the stage with the Jonas Brothers at the time, which was super exciting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, as a 16-year-old girl, you know, really loving the Jonas Brothers, and they were at their peak at that point, you know, doing so good. And so that was exciting. And then from there, I got my first band together. And ever since then, you know, I've been booking myself all over Deep South Texas here in my region and, you know, starting to get out there more. And with the single, you know, I feel like a lot more is to come. I'm excited.
Because that right there was my childhood. All right, I'm only 23, and I heard Radio Disney. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it was super cool. We got to dance and sing, and it was really cool. I loved it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's great to be able to have that opportunity to be a performer. I've had several of my guests have got their start on Radio Disney as well, and then they started out on their own a little bit as well. I mean. You know, how has that helped you in terms of your career? I mean, obviously it gave you some you know, kind of performance tips, et cetera, but, you know, kind of just having that experience under your belt.
Yeah, it has helped me a lot. You know, anytime that I have the chance to, you know, get out on the stage, and also the people that were around me, the talent that I was surrounded by other at the time, you know, kids that were so talented and seeing how they also progressed too and, you know, getting to know people and getting the training that I had from there. And it was basically the start of what I started doing, you know, opening shows for bigger artists. And it's, ever since then, you know, it's been getting, you know, bigger and bigger. And as far as the experience that I have now with being on that stage and that kind of concert-like setting is something I love now and something that I find, you know, just second nature to me. I'm just up there and it's just so natural and I love it and something that I want to continue to do and can't wait till I, you know, have my own, you know, concert and tour, big tour, and it's something that I've always, you know, been preparing for and that I'm ready for even more. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, speaking of which, I mean, you actually did perform a concert with you opened for Charlie Daniels, who's one of my favorite guests on the show. We've had him on several times. I mean, what's it like to kind of open for some of these legends? And did you kind of pick their brain a little bit about your career and what tips they could give you?
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. You know, I've opened, like you said, for some legends as Tracy Lawrence and now Charlie Daniels and, you know, some newer artists. But Charlie Daniels is definitely one that is in my top favorite, and I'll never forget. It was just an honor, and I'm just so blessed to have that opportunity. He's a really great guy, like you know, he's been a guest on your show, and just so willing to talk to, and so willing to give advice, and so willing to have a conversation with. You know, he's a normal great guy, and so talented, of course, and his band as well. Very, very awesome guys. I got to talk to his band before I talked to Charlie, and the band were very nice, and they were just, you know, they heard me perform as well, and they told, you know, for them to tell me, like, hey, one day we'll be opening for you, and, you know, for them to say that on their own, and not, it's just really encouraging, and, you know, and I think they know that as musicians in the industry, that things like that, and if they, you know, I'm sure they meant to, I hope, and really helped me a lot, and then meeting Charlie and talking to him specifically about another artist that's from my hometown. I'm from San Benito, Texas, and Freddie Fender grew up here and playing around the same place as I did. And, you know, he went to Nashville and did really good with some hits. And he knew Charlie Daniels back in the day. So we started to discuss that about Freddie Fender and their relationship and how they were friends back in the day and how they, you know, the stories they had. And he started reminiscing on it. And it just got really, you know, I got really emotional because it was pretty cool. And it was just a really great time. I'll never forget that. And definitely something that I'll never forget.
Yeah, my father is a Freddie Fender fan, so I remember quite a few songs. He has quite a few songs in his car. Wasted Days and Wasted Night, I think, is the one that's kind of in my head right now.
Yeah.
But yeah. Wasted Days and Wasted Nights. I remember that.
Yes, I sang that one. I love to cover that one.
Yeah. What were some of the people that you grew up listening to?
I grew up, you know, I was born in 1990, so 90s growing up, I was, you know, a lot. I was younger, but that really influenced me, the 90s country, and I continued on listening to 90s country, and of course 2000s, but George Strait, of course, number one for me. My dad was a big fan of George Strait, and he'd be playing it all the time, of course. And I like to always say this little story. Even while I was being born, my obstetrician had George Strait playing in the operation room while I was being born. So I heard that, like, you know, the first thing I heard when I came out into the world was George Strait, and that that's pretty cool to say. And also, you know, just listening to him and Brooks and Dunn, Alan Jackson is awesome as well. And just even older classic country that I looked into on my own growing up, I love Johnny Cash, and I love to sing Patsy Cline songs, you know, to cover that. Patsy Cline is one of my favorites. Johnny Cash, I've been reading up a lot about, you know, I have different books about him, and just getting, you know, to know about the singer-songwriter and behind all the things, you know, media says, you know, whatever. And just, you know, that and different, and I look at different artists for different parts of my career, you know, like Johnny Cash, I look at him as far as songwriting goes and mix it up and let it influence with my stuff. And then Patsy Cline because of her range and her voice. George Strait, because of his hit making, you know, you can't lie that all of his number one hits, they were number one hits for a reason. So I try to write in that sense, and I love that what he did with all those songs and how he selected those from all the songwriters. And also even Shania Twain was one of my favorites growing up because of her performance ability and her as an entertainer. She's an amazing entertainer and amazing performer. So
she
I mean
that
energy
about her.
Yeah, she's, oh my God, I saw her, well, I don't know if you were going to ask me or not, but I guess I'll bring it up about, I won her contest. She was having a Shania Twain sing-off contest in Las Vegas, and you had to submit videos, or you did this in person at Caesar's Palace, and I got the grand prize, you know, winner. They selected me, I submitted a video through YouTube, and it was just an honor, and to be there in Vegas just to see her live and perform on this trip in Las Vegas. It was pretty cool, you know, knowing that. I didn't get to meet her, though. You know, I wish one day maybe I will, but I'm sure she was just really busy and whatnot with her concerts going on. But it
you
was...
You can't get her to meet you, hint, hint.
Yeah, well, was that your first trip to Vegas?
Yes, it was my first and only. You know, I hope to go up there soon. You know, that was back in, I believe, 2012. And I hope to be back really soon. I love. That was during the rodeo time. You know, the Vegas rodeo, the national finals.
The NPR, which you know,
yeah.
I'm so saddened that we lost that in Orlando. It's like,
oh yeah,
you know what?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we lost that to Orlando.
Of all places, why Orlando?
Yeah.
Orlando doesn't even have that whole cowboyish feel to it. I mean, Las Vegas at least does. I mean, look at all the mountains and everything. Yeah, we have the Wild West kind of feel, not Orlando. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Orlando, when I think of Orlando, I think of Disney World or something, not bull riding.
Yeah, I know.
I got to say, I loved it over there. Yeah, it's a shame.
I mean,
we lost it. I mean, I always have the current Miss Rodeo USA on my show right before they crown the next one. And yeah, it's going to be kind of a shame that it's not in Vegas anymore. But I mean, it's disappointing.
You're
pretty
close to because of the PBR is that damn steakhouse on the Strip, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple country bars around. I'm trying to remember where they relocated Gilly's. I think they relocated over at the Treasure Island, if I remember correctly.
I'm not a local here.
Yeah. but anyway, I was going to ask you a little bit about, you know, speaking of which, you know, I'm more of a Texas country fan than I am a Nashville country fan. I'm pretty sure that you know that there's a line kind of there where it's, the Nashville sound is different than what a Texas sound is as well. I mean, can you give me your take on that? And do you feel that you swing one way or the other?
Yes, of course. I love both. You know, I love all kinds of music. First of all, like, you know, in all genres, and then within the genre of country music, there's so many influences from blues music to the rock and you know whatever and whatever else nowadays is going on, but. Nashville sound, the classic Nashville sound that I've loved, you know, I love it. And then Texas, you know, it all started with Willie Nelson and him coming over here and making a big, just this industry that has grown, this Texas music scene. is really great too, and I love both. You know, there's people like to say, oh, that's the Texas country genre, and I'm one to not like really, you know, really want to put a label on what I am or what I love to listen to. I'm just like, you know, that's country music to me, and I hear, you know, from Aaron Watson, he's a very traditional guy, and then I love Turnpike Troubadours, which they're, you know, they're a little bit more, it would be a more like the really bluegrass, like a punk fast, but also traditional rootsy band, and you know, it just depends on, I feel like Texas country is a variety of things as well, just like as far as Nashville goes. So, you know, I really can't say that there's a difference or a label on it. I just love them both, and I know that it is a different sound, and even within their own Texas country music and also Nashville, like even the more popular ones like Kevin Fowler and Randy Rogers, I listen to them both, and they're very different in themselves. So, and they're both supposed to be considered Texas country, but you know, I hear a big difference in their music, and I'm just kind of like, okay, yeah, they're both Texas country because they're from Texas, but you know, their styles are completely different to me. So I don't really like I said to put a label on it. I like to consider Texas country people who are from Texas and the Oklahoma area. Also, they consider that red dirt country and the scene down here but I honestly can't say that, you know, there's a big difference or I choose one side or another. I love it all.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great scene down there in Texas, especially around the Austin area, because there's just so much going on. I think Austin has the most live music bars in the country per capita. And, you know, it's really interesting to say the least. I mean, you know, have you had the opportunity to perform up in Austin?
No, actually, you know, I have not had the opportunity yet to perform in Austin. I'm in my region. We're called the Rio Grande Valley here, and we're a lot of small towns put together in South Texas, and a lot of people think South Texas is around San Antonio area, and I think South Texas is where I'm from. We're deep south, and I'm starting to play around a lot in San Antonio now, and Bandera, San Marcos, and I'm inching my way slowly to Austin. So Texas is huge, and to get, you know, to start to get out there is, and, you know, growing up in the deep south, is I'm inching my way, I believe, you know, up into northern parts of Texas now, and I also go back and forth to Nashville trying to get my, you know, roots starting to spread down up there as well. So I'm kind of like in between here in Nashville and meeting in the middle, like in the middle of Texas. So, I've always wanted to. I love Austin, and I played a few times up actually in Fort Worth, Texas as well. That's another awesome place with an awesome music scene there in the Stockyards with a lot of musicians, local musicians that play there. And it's super awesome as well. It's like a mini Sixth Street from Austin, and it's also like a mini Nashville where all these bars are all in one place, and all these awesome musicians are showcasing their stuff. So being able to play there was pretty cool. I played there a few times, and but you know, I'll get to Austin eventually.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a great leap for where you're going, because I mean, you're starting to get, you know, starting to make the national scene, as it were. Tell us a little bit about your new single and how that came about.
Well, about 4 years ago, I started to get this idea for the song. I started writing it. It didn't take me too long, but that's when I first really got the idea. I love to go out dancing. Besides me singing on stage and being out at the bars singing, I love to be out at the bars dancing. And dancing two-step, you know, here in Texas, and line dancing and all that stuff. And a lot of my friends as well, we all love to do it and go out. You know, we have specific days where, like, it's two-step Tuesday, we go out and have fun. Or actually tonight I'm playing a country night here at this other bar, and people love to dance. And so I was thinking, you know, what better way to put this together, and, you know, a relationship that, you know, you see somebody there at the dance hall, you have this physical attraction, and you know, it ends up however it ends up, but sometimes, you know, he only loves you on the dance floor, and you could take that whichever way you want, you know, whether it's a relationship and you guys are just going out dancing literally and you guys have a great time dancing and it just doesn't work out any other way, or, you know, it's just that physical attraction that you guys see each other at the dance hall and you guys are in love on that dance floor. But yeah, that's kind of like where the influence came from, and I'm glad everyone's liking it. It seems like everyone can relate to it. At first, you know, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, this is something that people can relate to. But now that it's becoming more of a reality, that it's getting out there, it's just like, whoa, like, it has such an impact on a lot of people, and I'm happy about that.
But and you, right. You said it didn't take you too long to write this. How long did it roughly take you, do you think?
I'm going to say, like, let's see, a span of like maybe like a week, you know, like sometimes it could take me like even one day or like, you know, 5 to 10 minutes or a week. Sometimes I have like, you know, a few songs where I haven't finished yet and it's been like 2-3 years, you know, so, but other ones, you know, just come and come together and, you know, but yeah, that one took me probably about a week to do, you know, I was really focused on it and I really wanted to get it right and it came out pretty cool.
Yeah, because I've talked to artists before on the show, and they said that, you know, some of the fastest I think were like, you know, 10 minutes maybe or you know, 8 minutes, you know, that they
yeah.
make the song
yeah.
or whatever.
Dude, I can't
so.
Even think about what I want to make for breakfast that fast. You kidding me?
Yeah, yeah, that's how it goes sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What instruments do you play?
I play guitar, acoustic guitar for songwriting. You know, I play and I'm starting to get, I've played for a while now since I was 15, but I've never really played on stage with it just because my brother is my guitar player, actually. He's my acoustic guitar player and he's an amazing, way better than I am. And so of course I want him to showcase his talent with me, and he's also a songwriter as well, helping me out with songs and co-writing with me. But yeah, I play guitar, we play guitar together and, but like I said, on stage I don't, and my brother does on stage. So it's a really cool deal that we got going on, and a lot of people think it's pretty cool too. And it's always so much fun to have a sibling with you and to have that in common. It's pretty cool.
All right.
Yeah,
so I have a quick question.
Go ahead, Tarina.
All right. So what is the school of talent like exactly? Because my sister is always... She loves singing. I said this before, like with our other hosts, guests that are on. Like my sister's very girly. She's very in a good way. My mom says it like this: I took all the testosterone out the womb. My sister took all the estrogen. So she's very sing-songy and dancing and pink and all that. And I want to know how does a school of talent, you know, help those wanting to pursue singing? Like how is it for anything else?
The school of talent, you mean I'm sorry, I didn't get that question. I'm so sorry. Can you ask me again? Sorry.
Let me clarify. How does the school of talent help with those wanting to pursue singing more than somebody who just doesn't want to do it in general? Like, is there any specific benefits to it? Like, how does it help somebody, you know, get better?
Oh, okay. Yeah, because, you know, I was, like I said, when I was 15, I did that, and they were Barbizon School of Modeling and Acting at the time, and then now they're the School of Talent, and I even got trained to start training down here in Harlingen area, San Benito area, the Deep South Texas area was what I mean, and then I started to travel and do some more training to kids who were either wanting to sing or wanting to act and whatnot, and sometimes you do get cases where parents are taking their kids there. And it's starting off, you know, kind of what my parents did, except these kids sometimes don't want to be there, or the parents are trying to do this to them, trying to, you know, push them out there just to see if maybe a little spark will happen and maybe they do want to go out into this industry and play. So, you know, I got all those kinds of kids that I got to meet and people who are starting off kind of when I was in that position. But you know, it does help overall, I believe, you know, even when you don't want to get out there and sing and you want to, like, you know, you're pretty shy and... it helps a lot to get that any sort of training as far as communication skills and people skills and getting out there and talking one-on-one and getting up in front of a class or getting up in front of on a stage. And that helps overall, I believe, in everyone's lives, whether you're going to pursue that, like, you know, career of singing, being on stage always, or you want to get into the working field and the working world and getting out there and talking to people. So I guess that answers your question, that it does. It does help one, totally.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, does your brother have a name for his guitar?
Oh man, you know, I actually don't. I don't know if he does. He's a very shy guy. I mean, we get along, and he's not always so shy, but sometimes he keeps things to himself. But I've got to ask him that. See if he named his guitar. That's pretty funny. He names his cars. He names his, you know, he has a muscle car here and a Jeep. But I need to ask him about that guitar.
Yeah, yeah, I know my buddy who's also the guitarist has a name for his guitar. He calls it Mrs. Jackson. I'm like, okay, Camilo, that's cool.
That's so funny.
No, I mean, if he can master that guitar, you know, he can name whatever he wants. I can't do that stuff.
That's so funny.
That's the thing, too, is that I've had a couple of female musicians on, and they don't name their guitars, and all of the guys do. They name their guitars. You know, especially some of the most popular musicians. I think even George Strait named some of his guitars, if I remember correctly, too. So,
oh,
yeah.
So cool.
Awesome. So, yeah, so I was just interested to see if he had a name for it. But that's very interesting, to say the least. Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to see that you're progressing very, very nicely in terms of your career. You've got a single out right now as well. I mean, are you thinking about maybe possibly going back over to acting maybe at some point?
And going over to where now?
Acting. Do you think you're going to go back to acting anytime soon,
yeah,
do you think?
I really do. You know, I really want to focus on getting, you know, when I'm on this for you know, I really want to pursue this, my country music and singing. And once I'm already established and I feel like I'm good to go, I want to get in contact with some of the people who had, you know, I do have some contacts where the agents that I used to talk to and whatnot, and the agencies, and there's one in Atlanta, Georgia. There's also the same one here in Dallas, and the auditions that they're, you know, getting for me and whatnot. And sometimes I can't make it because, you know, I have shows and I'm just really busy. So once I feel like I'm more established, I can get more into that. And, you know, the more connections that I have with a maybe, you know, bigger industry, I mean, agency, and to get those roles. But I love that, you know, I just think it's probably the artist part of me, you know, because I love to paint, I love to cook, I love to draw, I love to sing, I love to act, I love to dance, and it's just all part of it together. But I knew at an early age that I had to focus on one if I really wanted to succeed, and which one was it going to be. And of course, it was my singing and my songwriting, and eventually, you know, I want to do all that. You know, Johnny Cash did it, Elvis did it, you know, Tim McGraw does it, a lot of people who are out there, and that's where I want to be eventually one day.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Georgia, first of all, is booming right now. It has so many productions underway. I mean, I have a lot of connections out there, too, and they've been saying, wow, it's just so much expansion out there. I've had people on the show that said, oh, wow, the expansion is just so great in terms of the movie realm. They're probably the second busiest state behind California right now in terms of movie production. So,
dang,
you
yeah.
know, it's great to be able to as well. I'd love to see you on Nashville at some point. Maybe we can get you on Nashville at some point, you know?
Yeah.
There you go. That's perfect.
That would be so fun. I would love to do a little appearance in there, do something. I'll be a roadie in there.
Or, yeah, or you'll be playing the background or something, you know. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, like I said, I really look forward to kind of you expanding, you know, your horizons. Hopefully you'll be able to start playing outside the state. Maybe you'll play here eventually in Vegas at some point.
Yes.
But anyway, your single right now is currently out. Is it out, like, on Amazon and, you know, iTunes, et cetera, right now?
Yes. Everywhere, anywhere, okay. Any outlet store you can get it off of.
Okay, cool. So you guys can check it out there as well. You can follow her on Twitter at Madeline Vittoria on Twitter as well, and also on Facebook as well. And do you have a website?
Yes, it's under construction. Well, you can still visit it right now, but we're tweaking a little things. But it's madelinevictoriamusic.com, and you can visit that and keep up with my shows and what's new and going on. So, yeah.
How's it been on Twitter and Facebook and getting that instant reaction from the fans?
It's been, you know, it's been growing. It's, you know, I'm getting a lot of likes per week now, you know, rather than, I know Facebook now has those ads that you have to pay for and stuff to get more likes and stuff. I don't know what's going on with that, but I still see my likes going up now even more, even ever since the single was out. And then I also like to look at my Shazam account to see how many Shazams I'm getting. You know, when people hear my song and they want to know who it is, you can follow me on there, and then people, you know, are Shazamming my song. That's what gets me really excited. Someone's excited about hearing my song and wants to know who it is. So that's pretty cool. I really enjoy that. And I'm really happy and thankful for all the people who you know, new. I like to consider new fans, like, you know, new friends. And if they talk to me, you know, I want to talk to them back and I want to get to know them. And because I really appreciate, you know, them really, you know, supporting my music and stuff.
Well, I mean, that's great. That's great to hear. Like I said, I really hope that, you know, kind of you start to, you know, widen that circle a little bit and to be able to get out of state. So, you know, best of luck to you coming up with Nashville. Hopefully, hopefully you get a deal signed where you can start touring a little bit more nationally as well. And best of luck with the single. I hope it climbs up the charts really, really fast. And hopefully when the couple of those more singles comes out from you, maybe we'll have you back on the show.
Yeah, awesome. I really appreciate all that, and all those words mean a lot to me. So, and thank you so much for having me today.
No problem, Madeline.
It was awesome having you. I learned a lot.
Yeah.
that's great to hear. I mean, that's awesome to hear Serena. So, yeah. So, Madeline, you know, best of luck to you, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you so much. You'll have a good day.
Yeah, you too.
You too.
Are there, Serena?
Yeah, I'm still here. I mean, wow, I'm not really a big country person, but you know what? That was a lot. That was really good. I learned a lot from that. And you know what? I know a bunch of my fans are going to be like, no, Serena, don't do it. But I'm going to check this out now. I'm going to check out her single after I get off the phone, because thank God for Spotify, you know?
Yeah. You know, I'm across the board. I like everything. So, you know, and, you know, I grew up on a lot of more Texas country than I was a lot more Nashville country, which is kind of good. But yeah, I mean, you know,
I never knew there was a difference.
there is a difference. And it really, to tell you the truth, and this is an interesting thing, it's that in my 20s, I was listening to a lot of more, I think I was more into like a little rap and everything like that. But when I got into my 30s, I started to start listening to more country again, which is kind of weird. But, you know, it's just how my tastes ended up changing when I matured a little bit. So it's just interesting to say the least. It's interesting. Hopefully she'll do well.
Oh, Mark, as my one sponsor says, normal is only a setting on the washer. So don't worry about that.
exactly. You know, how do you define crazy, you know?
mm-hmm.
How do you define sane? Because we're all a little bit of crazy, though, too. So, exactly. At Serena Southpaw, you can follow Serena on Twitter and also on Facebook as well. Really look forward to it. Yeah, I really hope to. You know, well, I don't think your fight's going to be streamed at all, is it?
No, but I'll try and have someone record it or something, because I do want to kind of put it out there regardless of the outcome.
Yeah, exactly. I think everybody wants to see it too, and all that as well. And you know, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, and it's great to have another mind on here and curious mind on here as well, and to be able to ask questions as well. So you're always welcome to come back to host whenever you like.
Thanks, Mark.
As well.
I hope to come back, because I learned. I feel like not only was I, you know, just a co-host, I feel like I was also in for a, you know, a cultural, you know, education treat. So it was pretty cool. I like it a lot. So I, you know, in time when I'm not busy, you know, cutting weight and crying every time I see a caramel apple, I think I'll be more than happy to jump back on and co-host with you.
no problem at all. And, you know, obviously best of luck to you. And I know we'll be talking to each other offline off the air a lot over the next couple of weeks. But, you know, best of luck to you. And we'll definitely talk. You know, Team Gomi members have to stay together.
Gomi Nation, what?
Gomi Nation. thanks a lot, Serena. And like I said, we'll talk afterwards. I'm pretty sure of it. But best of luck to you in your fight.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, see you.
Yep, bye. Serena de Jesus, everybody. You guys can check her out at Serena Softball on Twitter. We've got about 90 seconds left. I want to mention that I think we'll be back next week. I'll let you know on the time, probably on Thursday. We'll be booking two more guests. I think we're going to be I'm going to start doing that for the next couple weeks, just so we can play catch up on some of the stuff that I missed. Please follow us on Twitter at SWIV, at SWIV, that's Somewhere in Vegas, SWIV, on Twitter. And somewhere in Vegas on Facebook, you guys can check us out there as well, some of our old interviews as well. VegasPodcasting.com for some of our old interviews as well there as well. Yeah, it's exciting to be able to have a show again. Like I said, we've been kind of off for a couple weeks just because of extenuating circumstances, as it were. We are now on Google Play, so you guys can find us on Google Play now if you have the Google Store, but also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. I believe all of those outlets will have the podcast as well. So we will see you next week at some point. Like I said, I'll let you know on Thursday what time and who's going to be on as well. So actually tomorrow will be Thursday. So we'll see you guys next week here on Somewhere in Vegas. Have a great day, and rest in peace, Sean. We miss you a lot.